Well, as it's our AGM today, postponed from Sunday last, it seems appropriate to speak a little bit about this community. And I want to do this by exploring further the links with the symbolism of this chalice that we light every week. And Reverend Cliff Reid, in this book, a compilation, The Unitarian Life, draws out comparisons between the chalice and religious communities. He says, the chalice is a metaphor for the lives of human beings, both as individuals and in community. A cup is a familiar object made to be shared and held. The flame, by contrast, cannot be weighed or measured. It is not a static thing, but a dynamic changing process. And he goes on to say, the flame needs three elements. Firstly, fuel. Without fuel, without the sticks, the paper, the coal, the flame shrinks. Like kindling for fire, people also need the fuel of physical things to keep them alive. And so too in this community, we need our buildings, our money, our resources. The second thing needed to keep the flame alight is heat. And that sounds obvious. But if you dampen a flame with water, the glow will go out. And we too need heat in our relationships with each other, the spark of intelligence, the warmth of encounter, and perhaps even the friction of disagreement and challenge at times to keep our community alive. And the third element is air. If a fire lacks air, it smoulders, and you get plenty of heat and smoke, but very little light. And the spirit has always been compared with air or wind. So the spirit, whether we call that God or the divine presence or whatever we want to call it, there's a comparison there with the idea of air. And obviously in religious communities, we need that inspiration of something larger than ourselves, of that invisible yet vital element that connects us with the source of life. And Cliff Reid reminds us that Unitarians, unlike Moses in the Bible, who stumbles across the burning bush, he just wanders into it burning bright in the wilderness. Rather for us, the flaming chalice is something that needs to be lit. We need to actually light the fire and relight it and keep it alight. It requires an act of will and faith. And this flame is handed down from person to person, from generation to generation. And it's a bit like the Olympic torch relay, I guess, that passed our chapel last summer. And some of you were here. I had a wonderful occasion out on the road here. And we've got this wonderful photo of the Olympic torch, the flame alight. And in the background, we have our very own flame, and we had it first. You know, we didn't steal it. We had the flame first. So it's a wonderful picture. And the UK Olympic torch relay captured the imagination of many people. I'm sure you're all aware of some of these facts, but it lasted 70 days. The flame travelled 8,000 miles, carried by 8,000 torchbearers, and the flame first lit the temple in Olympia in Athens, was kept alight in miners' lamps during its journey through the skies via British Airways, and it travelled by boat and train and road and horse, and was even carried via zip wire and cable car up mountains and hills. And the flame was supposed to burn constantly without going out during the Olympic Games, but I think on several occasions, due to malfunctioning burners or extreme winds, it did go out. And apparently there was consternation at the Olympic Stadium when the cauldron had to be extinguished so they could move it from one part of the venue to another. But throughout it all, the mother flame was kept alight in a lantern, a special lantern. And when the torches went out, they were relit from this original source. So I suppose you could say that the flame continued. It was the same flame that was passed on over all those miles. And the idea of the perpetual flame forever burning goes back centuries. In Rome, I'm sure you've all heard of the Vestal Virgins, and I know there's lots of programmes about it, the sort of carry-on films which rather trivialise it. but they were priestesses of Vesta, the goddess of the hearth. And these girls and young women were carefully chosen to cultivate the sacred fire of Vesta. Not the curry, there's a curry or something, Vesta, isn't there? and freed from social and family obligations. By maintaining this sacred fire, anyone could receive fire for household use. So they functioned as surrogate housekeepers in a religious sense for all of Rome. And allowing this sacred fire to go out was a serious offence, punishable by scourging, which sounds very brutal to modern minds, but it shows how important the idea of this burning flame was. If it was allowed to go out through accident or neglect, it was thought that the goddess Vesta would abandon her people and calamity would strike. Well, there were no penalties when the Olympic torches went out, thankfully. But I did read, and perhaps Larissa knows more about this than me, in the Moscow Times a few weeks back, that the police were still looking for four schoolgirls who apparently had thrown snowballs on the a World War II monument until the fire had been extinguished. And apparently it's common in Russia for these monuments to exist with the flame that's supposed to be kept burning across the years. There you go. And police were still looking for the schoolgirls as an act of vandalism, and it was unknown what their punishment would be if they were caught. So I guess even today it can be considered a big deal. The flame symbolises something of great significance which needs to be treated with respect. So thinking about that idea of the flame in our own lives, what about our own inner flame? Sometimes as individuals, the flame of enthusiasm, our inner light, burns low, or may even be snuffed out for a time through the vagaries, the pressures of life, illness, exhaustion, depression, setbacks. And sometimes it goes out through our own neglect and lack of effort. And sometimes the flame is snuffed out by the unkindness or malice of others. But at such times, if we're lucky, there will be others who rekindle that spark. People who believe in us, encourage us, and energise us. And being part of a community can offer that. And then there's the flame of community, the collective flame. And in this community, the flame of this chapel has burned continuously for several centuries. And this year we celebrate our 230th anniversary at this chapel. And I'm not sure when we first started to light an actual chalice here. Maybe some of you who've been around longer than me remember, maybe late 80s, early 90s, possibly. But we didn't always light it. This is in the last few decades. But even before there was an actual chalice to light, the people who gathered kept the flame of liberal religion burning. But there were difficult times in the history of this chapel. The flame burnt very low, almost snuffed out. And I've been reading some old papers, historical papers about the chapel, and came across a letter by the Reverend Mabel Beams, the woman up there, who was minister here from 1936 to 1970, a long time. And in the newsletter for February 1947, which I've got here, she urges people to attend the AGM. See, things don't change. Miss Beams did it, so I can do it too. Will you please make a point of coming to our annual general meeting in February, back then? 1946 was one of the most difficult years for Mead Row Chapel. And the difficulties are not likely to grow less in the near future. A small group of men and women have been carrying the main burden of work and responsibility for a very long time. We need new friends and helpers. And we can imagine the difficulties that the community faced here. The war was just over. Members had been dispersed. Some of the men had gone away to fight. I'm not sure, I think one or two were injured in the war. It obviously had a big impact when they came back. People were on rations with few resources. And I imagine the whole idea of church going, faith was at an all-time low in the aftermath of the brutalities of two world wars. And the community picked itself up, carried on, but faced challenging times again in the 70s. Finally, Miss Beam's imminent retirement, and the congregation dwindled to only a handful. And once again, it seemed perhaps the light would go out. Would this chapel close? And Terry Slade, who most of you will know sitting here today, one of our oldest chapel members, recalls the annual general meeting in 1970, where the question was asked, do we close our doors, or does the Liberal Witness go on? And Terry's response is recorded in this minute book, and it reads, Mrs. Slade said she thought it was very important that every effort should be made to maintain a centre of liberal religious thought in Godalming, and she was prepared to do all she could towards this end. And she did, and Terry worked along with others here very hard to keep this chapel open, taking over the youth programme, which I think was about to close, and others came along, some of you here today, the Teagles, the Hayhurst, Adrian, those who've been quite a long time, came along and took up the torch. And this chapel was kept going without a minister for 23 years, which is quite an achievement, 23 years with nobody really in terms of in the lead. So what about today? Well, I think that the flame of this chapel burns brightly. In an age of declining church attendance, where most churches are seeing less people attend, surprisingly, this chapel has bucked the trend, for example, how it was 40 years ago. Attendance at services is well over double. And although we're still small in number, perhaps we're not in quite that dire situation we were back in Miss Beams' time. And that's cause for celebration. But we can't take it for granted. And our movement as a whole is facing challenging times with dwindling membership and resources. But I believe we can keep the fire of Liberal Witness burning brightly if we collectively attend to it, pooling our talents and resources, strengthening our relationships, and allowing the wind of the Spirit to fan our flames. And at our AGM today, Adrienne will stand down after 18 years as secretary. That's a long time, 18 years. And I want to acknowledge your huge contribution, Adrienne. And I could name others here also who have devoted many years of service. But just as a relay runner can't carry on forever, so others are needed to take up the torch. And Laurie has agreed to take on the role of secretary, passing on the torch, and for that we're thankful. We welcome new people, new talents, new ideas. And it may only be your fourth, fifth, sixth time here, but each of you is welcome and each of you adds to our collective light. And in John's Gospel, Jesus calls himself the light of the world. But in Matthew's Gospel, he says something rather more radical, speaking to his disciples. He says, "You are the light of the world." Fishermen, common people, poorly educated, you are the light of the world. And perhaps these words can still speak to us today, whether we feel like it or not. You are the light of the world, we are the light of the world. And the next part of the passage tells us not to hide our light under a bushel. And I don't know about you, but I always used to puzzle, what on earth is a bushel? Well, it's nothing to do with a bush, it's just a basket. Jesus is simply saying, don't hide your light away. And often we hold back our talents or our contributions because it doesn't feel enough, or we feel too weak or tired or scared or unsure. And I certainly include myself in this. If you'd told me 15 years ago I'd be standing here today, I would have said, absolutely no way. But each of us has more light than we realise. And last week we listened to a reading by Marian Williamson, which reflected that. And I'll repeat a few of those words. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. We are all meant to shine as children do. We were born to make manifest the glory of God that is within us. It's not just in some of us, it's in everyone. And as we let our own light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. And they may sound like grand words, and even as I'm saying them, I'm thinking, oh, you know, it's a bit too grand. But maybe there is truth in that. It's not all down to us. I'm not saying that we are the only chapel or church community in this town that has this light. Of course, I'm not saying that. There's many other faith communities and individuals in this town just as committed to the values we stand for. We're only one small light amongst others. But even so, I think the world would be poorer if our Unitarian Church as a whole ceased to exist. And I think Godalming would be poorer if this chapel, if the flame were to go out. And I know my own life would have been poorer and very different. And I'm not saying poorer financially, and not just in terms of my vocation now as the minister. Albert Schweitzer writes, "At times our own light goes out and is rekindled by a spark from another person. Each of us has cause to think with deep gratitude of those who have lighted the flame within us." And my life would have been poorer because I found this to be true here. When I came here 16 years ago, people helped me relight my own inner flame during a difficult time, and I was welcomed into the warmth of this community. And so I'd invite each of you to think about how this community has made a difference to your life. Yes, and let's be honest, if you've been around for any length of time, it may have added to your workload at times, may have caused you stress. All communities do, but I hope it's also enriched your life in some way. And if you've received something from this community, if it matters to you, I'd ask you to think about how you can help to keep the flame burning. None of us can do it alone, but collectively we can. Some of you have committed many years and time to this chapel, maybe deserve a rest. Others of you may have talents and energy and ideas waiting to be used. And I hesitate to give this kind of sermon because I know people lead busy lives and some of you are already stretched to full capacity, and we know that. And I'm not asking you to become Vestal Virgins. And I'm not going to say any more on that. And sacrifice your home and family life for the sake of this chapel. But I am asking you to consider if there's something more you could do, however small. And there are many little jobs which, if they could be spread out more evenly, would make a difference. And in practical terms, we have a couple of sheets here which we're going to circulate in the hall. We're just outline some of the little jobs that need doing. Perhaps you'd welcome the chance to be involved in service, leading worship or contributing musically. Perhaps you could organise a social activity or offer pastoral support to someone. Perhaps you'd feel able to make tea or do flowers, and we acknowledge the new tea makers with us today, Roger and Sarah. And some of the things on this job are as simple as making sure the washing up liquid is replaced when it runs out. They're really small jobs, but if one person could actually make sure we have Ecover washing up liquid in the kitchen, that would make a difference. So they're not all onerous. So we'd invite you, if you can, just to see if there's something on here. And if there's something you feel you can contribute that's not on the list, please let me know. And even if you can't contribute in any of these ways, if your own flame is burning low and you need to attend to yourself first, that's also okay. Because just by coming here, by turning out on Sundays when you can, you contribute in no small way to the warmth of this community. And there's a story of a man who stops going to church and is visited by the vicar. You know, you dread that happening. The knock on the door, where have you been? I'm not going to do that. Well, who knows? Well, if I do, I won't have a dog collar anyway. And the vicar says nothing, but he looks at the fire and he just gets some tongs and he simply with the tongs picks up a piece of coal from the fire and he moves it away from the other coals. And the piece of coal goes out. And then the vicar puts on his coat and leaves saying, I'll see you in church. And the message is obvious. We need the warmth of others to keep our own light burning. But we in turn add to the heat and energy of others. And when we think of the origins of this flaming chalice in the Second World War, what we do here may not be very grand. Unlike Unitarians back then, we aren't putting our lives at risk to help people flee Nazi persecution. But perhaps in our own small way, we do offer a place of refuge in an often lonely world. And our liberal religious voice is still needed for some of the issues of our day. And last year we had a memorial service for Philip Overbury. Philip was another devoted member, instrumental in keeping this chapel going in hard times. And I close with some words by George Bernard Shaw, which Philip read out in this chapel in 1999, and which I read at his memorial service last year. And they seem appropriate for the theme today. Some words by Bernard Shaw. I am of my opinion that my life belongs to the whole community, and as long as I live, it is my privilege to do whatever I can. I want to be thoroughly used up when I die, for the harder I work, the more I live. I rejoice in life for its own sake. Life is no brief candle to me. It is a sort of splendid torch which I've got to hold up for a moment, and I want to make it burn as brightly as possible before handing it on to future generations. So I think I've said enough, but just collectively would invite you to do all you can to help keep this flame alight for years to come. And we're now going to listen to some music, and as we do, we're simply going to pass this around. You don't have to say anything, but it's just a symbolic way of acknowledging each person here and the light you will bring. So I'm going to light this candle. If I can find. I was going to steal some fire from the fire people here. Thank you.